Pegasus Stores, Pendragon, Walden Pond, and Global Exchange on College Avenue. Once again, an evening with Angela Davis, Friday, December 2nd at the First Congressional Church, 2501 Harrison at 25th Street in Oakland. This event, proudly presented by KPFA's Hard Knock Radio, Global Exchange, the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, and Seven Stories Press. All proceeds benefit KPFA Free Speech Radio.
Or directly under the surveillance and control of the criminal justice system. Now, something is wrong with that.
You are tuned to 94.1 KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, and you are tuned to, Your Own Health and Fitness. This is Dave Ross filling in for Board Op and so forth now. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, health integrationist, and I come to you weekly to discuss the personal politics of health. It's no secret that modern life increases potentially health-threatening exposures, and that the number of these exposures are growing. Still, it may surprise you to know that since the late 1950s, with the introduction of radio and TV into homes, there has been a marked increase in the number of cases of melanoma, skin cancer, and it's still increasing today. This is just the tip of the iceberg. As you'll learn during this hour, increased exposures to radiation from both radio and television frequency is now joined by the spread of cell phone and wireless technologies to create an electrosmog that's difficult to avoid. What are the dangers, and how much choice do you have about your exposure to them? I'm joined today by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett, my co-producer, political economist, and health educator, Dr. Ole Johansson from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. He is the most recognized researcher on the adverse effects of radio frequency and cell phone radiation, and Doug Loringer, whose film Bad Exposures explores how a city is fighting to resist being blanketed by wireless technology. Dr. Ole Johansson is associate professor, head of the experimental dermatological unit in the Department of Neuroscience at the Karolinska Institute, famous for its Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine, in Stockholm, Sweden. He is a world-leading authority in the field of electromagnetic radiation and health effects. He's published more than 500 original articles, reviews, book chapters, and conference reports within the field of basic and applied neuroscience. We're also joined I'm getting flummoxed here. I have so many people. Doug Loringer, whose film Bad Exposures explores how a city, as I said, is resisting. He is. Doug Loringer is a San Francisco-based community organizer and documentary filmmaker. In 2000, he founded SNAFU, the San Francisco Neighborhood Antenna Free Union, a grassroots citywide coalition of community residents and neighborhood groups that focuses on the impacts of proliferating wireless technologies. His recent film is Bad Reception. And last, political economist, health educator, Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett, who, as I said, co-produces the show and is editor of the Progressive Health Observer and executive director of the nonprofit. Now, I'm going to want to concentrate the first half of the show on Dr. Ole Johansson's research, and I think we have everybody on the line, but we'll start off by really digging into Dr. Johansson's research, and I believe you're there. Welcome to you, Dr. Johansson. I'm so pleased to talk to you.
Thank you very much. The same to you.
How nice after emailing you back and forth to hear your voice. Your recent article reporting on the connection between FM broadcasting and melanoma shows health effects from exposures to radio frequency radiation showing up as early as the late 50s.
Yeah.
So now we're seeing additional forms of radiation adding to exposures to various sort of chemical pollution around and all these various things causing a variety of immunological effects.
Yeah.
And it seems to start with the skin. Can you explain?
Well, very early in the late 1970s, the discussion arose actually in the United States and in Norway that maybe various forms of electromagnetic fields, at that time power-frequent magnetic fields, may be connected to various cancer forms. And the very famous studies by Wertheimer and Leeper in Denver, United States, came to the conclusion that there was a connection between such magnetic fields and childhood leukemia, something that has been pinpointed, especially the last 5 to 10 years. For instance, both in American authorities in California, but also at the World Health Organization in Geneva, Switzerland. And nowadays, that is assumed that this is one of the causing factors for childhood leukemia, and such conferences are held more or less every month throughout the world. And at that time, in Sweden, in Norway, and in other countries, people came forward telling us as scientists that they felt bad, for instance, in front of computer screens, and later on in the 90s using DECT telephones, wireless connections indoor, mobile telephones and so on, and the initial symptoms came from the skin. And of course we got very interested because we realized that the increasing wealth of various forms of magnetic and electric signals in the air causing some kind of electrosmog, as they say in Germany, may be one of the causative factors for other forms of, for instance, cancer, neurological diseases, and so on. And as you already have told your audience, we did concentrate on the possible connection between FM radio signals and malignant melanoma of the skin. And of course, we still need to do further research to really say whether this is a complete truth or not. But we have done more and more detailed studies, and still from an ecological and epidemiological point of view, it does hold true, you know, yes.
One of the things that's interesting is that you don't have to just look at the epidemiological studies to kind of make correlations here. You have actual research where you're testing the skin itself.
Oh, yes.
And you can track the changes in the mast cells. So can you explain how that works?
Well, in the 1980s, we started to investigate skin biopsies from people having the functional impairment, what we call electrohypersensitivity. And we then saw such alterations. And actually, the pattern we saw in our microscopes is the very same you would see if you would be subjected to ionizing irradiation, like from radioactive isotopes, or from X-ray irradiation, or from strong ultraviolet light. And the sort of cellular concert taking place in the skin was exactly the same when we looked at people that have been subjected to irradiation from computer screens and likewise. And our working hypothesis since then has been that these alterations is a sign of an irradiation damage. And in this case, we are talking about non-ionizing radiation from, for instance, mobile telephony, indoor wireless connections, outdoor wireless fidelity, wireless internet, and so on, you know. And we are, I would say, surprised and maybe even a little bit shocked to see that all over the world, this gigantic full-scale human biological experiment is taking place without governments, companies, and so on really knowing that this is harmless.
What's interesting is that you were able to test the skin reactions of people who weren't reporting that they felt an effect from the exposures.
Yeah, that's really true. And that's also very interesting because, you know, if you would be, for instance, without knowing it, subjected to damaging effects from, for instance, X-ray or whatever, you wouldn't initially feel anything. The damage would show up later on, maybe in days or weeks. And the very same happened when we put normal, healthy volunteers. In that case, it was Swedish students, Swedish medical students, that were placed with a back at 40 centimeters from ordinary household TVs ordinary household computer screens, and they didn't feel anything. And still, we could see already after 2 hours a reaction pattern with, for instance, the mast cells that you described earlier, and these cells had reacted in such a way that they would mimic very closely the pattern seen after other types of irradiation damage. And still, as you say, the normal healthy volunteers had no subjective feeling whatsoever. But the cells, they had felt the presence of something. And since this was a blind-coded and controlled experiment, we have to anticipate that something in this situation, coming from the computer screens, from the television sets, had caused this alteration. And of course, it's very hard to think it should be anything else than some form of radiation, maybe in concert with airborne chemicals. And still, I mean, we need to do further experiments, but that is also the kind of bottleneck, I guess you would say, in the United States, because it's extremely difficult, in Sweden at least, to get any funding to continue these kind of studies.
Oh, gee, I wonder why.
Well, I mean, I wonder
too. I'm being sarcastic,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder too, and it's very strange, because if you look around in the scientific literature today, you have so much published regarding such radiation-dependent effects at the molecular, cellular, tissue level, animal experimental level, as well as human experimental level. And I hear from my colleagues throughout the world that they do run into problems when they want to duplicate previous research or continue along new lines.
What's interesting here also is that, you know, just to kind of back up and sort of talk about this in a way that people can get their brains around, we're talking about primarily the research was done with regular, the old-style video tube screens,
yeah, right.
VDTs, and
yeah.
I'm wondering whether the advent of these new technologies like the LCD
yeah.
screen has decreased the amount of radiation that people are being exposed to when they're using their computers.
Well, when I talk to specialists in this field, they say that within certain frequencies, yes, new computer screens and other equipments do have much lower radiation levels, but in other frequency intervals, it's the opposite. And when you talk to people having the functional impairment electrical hypersensitivity, and you ask them what they think about the new LCD screens and other such type of new computer equipment, they say either that it's much better, some say it's equal to earlier, and some say it's even worse than before. So you don't get a clear-cut image, and again, as a scientist, I have to, of course, then call for controlled, blind-coded experimentation. And then, as I said before, we do need funding, and without it, we are stuck.
Let's talk for a moment about the actual thing that you're seeing change. The mast cells are responsible for producing substances like somatostatin, which
yeah.
causes itchiness and like an
yeah.
allergic reaction. Then we have the dendrites. You're seeing changes in stress hormones. You're
yeah.
seeing neurological symptoms like Alzheimer's. And because the mast cells are present in the heart, you're seeing heart effects. Can you
yeah.
talk about what you're seeing? Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, what we have done is that we have sort of pulled together different pieces of this gigantic jigsaw puzzle, and as you say, the mast cell is really the key cell when you talk about asthma, allergy, other forms of oversensitivities, as well as problems in various tissues and organs throughout the body. And they do contain chemical components such as heparin, histamine, and other molecular molecules, and when they are released upon various forms of irritation, they then cause exactly the type of subjective sensations that, for instance, people with the impairment electro hypersensitivity are reporting. So actually it sort of comes down to one single cell type and one or two molecules that could explain the symptoms that they say they get in front of, for instance, a computer screen. And of course, again, there are other cell types we have looked at also reacting in a sort of classical irradiation type of image. And again, we need further evidence, of course, but it does point in one direction only, that you should be very cautious with these new irradiation-based technologies, regardless if we talk about radio waves, microwaves, power frequency fields, or whatever. You need to be cautious.
Well, especially because when you're talking about these changes in the mast cells throughout the body, you're looking at an increase of inflammation.
Yeah.
Inflammatory byproducts, which we're seeing now as causal for cancer,
mm-hmm.
for, as you said, allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing changes in stress hormones, which mm-hmm. makes me think that you're going to see bone loss, maybe demineralization of the bones mm-hmm. if the stress hormones
yeah.
are high. And you're talking about increases of Alzheimer's and
mm-hmm.
heart effects. So
mm-hmm.
it's very interesting to think that as we layer one layer on top of another layer
mm-hmm.
of these different forms of radiation, the net effect of each one getting larger and creating
mm-hmm.
more interaction is that we're seeing more diseases of inflammation, which is
yeah.
what, you know, suddenly everybody's on statin drugs for this.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe what's really going on is that there is no cautionary principle in this accumulation
mm-hmm.
exponentially of all this radiation.
Mm-hmm. Very true indeed, I would say, you know. And unfortunately, in countries such as Sweden and elsewhere, you do see a large increase in new cases each year of, for instance, cancer, Alzheimer's disease, asthma and allergy, that is really exploding. And I read also in various scientific journals that you have equal pattern in the United States, that the number of such diseases are now increasing very rapidly in the population. And in Sweden, the kind of breaking point is the year 1997, when the and that
yes.
coincides, you know, with the introduction
yes.
of second generation GSM-based
mm-hmm.
mobile telephony. So, of course, we are very curious to see in more detailed studies whether that also coincides with the introduction of more and more cases of these various forms of diseases. So I certainly agree with that.
Well, in fact, that's where I was going to lead you next, was to that paper. Just a quick idea of the show. I'm Lane Berman. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm joined right now on the phone from Stockholm, Sweden, by Dr. Ole Johansson. His first name is O-L-L-E. Last name is J-O-H-A-N-S-S-O-N. He's from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. He's the most recognized researcher on the adverse effects of electromagnetic radiation and cell phone radiation. We're joined by two other people as well, but right now we're concentrating on Dr. Johansson's research. What happened in 1997 is the name of a paper you wrote, and what
yeah.
you saw was more sick days, decreased recovery from illness and operations,
mm.
and immunological sorts of problems like increased allergies and
mm.
asthma.
Mm.
Are these classic IgE-mediated things, or is this a whole different thing? Because, I mean, I know that in the 1980s, when people began to be sick with something that we've called environmental illness, these very
mm.
sensitive people that you're describing,
mm.
it was felt that because you couldn't see a reaction in the IgE, which is the classic antibody reaction for allergies, that
mm.
these people were making it up.
Mm.
So I'm wondering whether you're seeing it affecting other kinds of antibody systems other than the IgE, and that's
yeah.
why it's...
Oh, that's a very good comment, you know, and we have just started in a very small scale because we don't have the research economy really needed for it, but investigate exactly this type of markers for various parts of the immune system. And the thing is, you see, that when you go back, as you say, to the early 1980s, the classical view of the immune system was, at that time, felt to be complicated with a lot of different chemical molecules, but of course it was really in its infancy. Today we talk about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of various forms of molecular markers for activation of the immune system, and even if you don't see an increase in IgE or IgG or something like it, you may very well still have a activation of the classical mast cells, the various dendritic cells, including the Langerhans cells of the immune system, and so forth. And you really need to run through all these various forms of cell proliferation markers, cell traffic markers, etc., before you can conclusively answer the question, do you have kind of a classical activation, or is there what I would call a new non-classical activation? And I have to point out that when we talk about electrohypersensitivity in Sweden, such persons have been investigated because the same claim was made here that they were just making this up. And they were then tested for psychology and psychiatry, and they were found to be just as normal as you and I are.
Yeah,
so
in
they
fact,
didn't differ at any such form.
No.
And people has also done various blind and double-blind provocation studies with humans, but above all, you have the enormously large number of studies on cells, on tissue pieces, on animals, where you cannot claim that they make it up because, you know, like in Sweden, it was said that people, they listen to the radio, for instance, and then they turn the radio off and start feeling, am I ill? Yes, I am ill. And they sort of imagine the whole situation. But Jesus, cells and rats do not listen to radio, and still they get large alterations, damages, changes, and so forth that could not be explained by any form of psychology or imagination. So, I mean, that kind of counter-argument is just left behind in Sweden.
Well, and it was very moving for me to discover in your papers, you're constantly going back and saying that people who are hypersensitive, that we should be grateful to these people because they are signaling to us that we're
yeah.
all in trouble and
yeah.
that they should be treated with incredible compassion and
of
given
course.
Lots. You know, because this is a very big political issue here, which is the politics of exposure. Do we
yeah.
have a right to be to choose what we're exposed to? Do we have a right anymore? And now, you know, with all the chemicals in the environment and then radiation from other sources as well, even radioactive fission products, which we're now getting exposure to because of the various conflicts across
yeah.
the world. You know, our invasion of Iraq is producing
yeah.
a lot of munitions that are
yeah.
drifting over to various countries.
I mean, I think the simple mistake in the future, when people look back 100 years ahead of us now, and they look back on our age, they would say that the simple mistake was that we anticipated, not you and I maybe, but people in general, they anticipated that evolution had given them a protection against human-invented things like, as you say, radiation from radioactive isotopes, or mobile telephony, or wireless internet, or whatever, things that have been not around for more than 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and that the evolution will protect them from such irradiation damage. And of course, the evolution has not given you any such protection whatsoever. And again, I'm very, very surprised to see that the political and economical systems just take I guess you would say a long shot. I mean, they really gamble with the future. And that's especially important when we talk about our kids, because if we do gamble with their health and their possibilities for reproduction and so on, Jesus, I mean, tomorrow there may not even be a mankind reporting 100 years ahead of us.
And the Earth will probably sigh a long sigh of relief.
Yeah, that's really true, because for the entire environment, of course, humans, we are the problem, you know.
Mm-hmm, I do. So a few other small issues. You treated some hypersensitive people with doses of vitamin A of 5,000 IUs, international units. Now, this is very interesting to me because I've known for a long time that people whose thyroids, for instance, are damaged by whatever, possibly radiation changes in the DNA that gets inherited in families, don't utilize or make vitamin A very easily. But I know also that vitamin A is synergistic with vitamin D. And, of course, in Sweden, you have a problem with vitamin D because there's not as much sun as we
true.
Have here.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering also whether, since vitamin D is very protective of from melanoma as well, people seem to be just, there's a rampant deficiency of vitamin D everywhere because people are sitting in front of their computer screens instead of going outside. So A and D together might be a
and
treatment.
And that's interesting, because just this evening in Stockholm I was at the discussion where other investigators, they put forward the sort of hypothesis that in Sweden, people are, as you know, very pale in the skin. But the last 5, 10, 15 years, people have become even paler. And the case report you are referring to was very interesting because we had a person that got a very bad sensitivity to ordinary light. And she had to live for months in more or less complete darkness. And while she had that period, we took a biopsy of the skin of her knee and found to our enormous surprise that the normally confluent layer of protective cells in the upper part of the skin called the epidermis, it was just gone. And of course, if that is gone, what you would anticipate scientifically is that the person would not stand not even a single photon of light, which she didn't. Then she got better after the treatment of the vitamin A, which was really, I mean, from a clinical point of view, just a long shot. We just tried everything we had at hand, but she improved, and we took a second biopsy after like 8-9 weeks, and then single cells had returned. So it seemed that the layer normally protecting us from ordinary light and ultraviolet light was regrowing. And after some time, she was much, much better and could stand more and more light, and the cells were returning in increasing numbers. Of course, no one could know that about your own skin. I mean, you are not equipped with that kind of sensations. So you had a true reaction. And the question is, was it chemicals in the food, airborne chemicals, together with or not together with irradiation that was causing these heavy alterations of her skin? And of course, again, we would like to pursue that kind of studies in the future, given that we do have some funding.
Well, I do think that there are some nutrients that help to protect the body. Antioxidants and various, and these fat-soluble vitamins help too. But still, you do have to reduce the exposure. You mentioned in your research that the skin is an antenna. Can you explain that?
Well, actually, that is an idea brought forward by people in the physics area. And they had said that maybe the skin would sort of function as an antenna, and depending on the wavelength of the irradiation we are talking about, either molecules will be affected, or you would be affected at the cellular level or the tissue level. And of course, everyone knows that the entire body is an extremely good antenna. If you have an ordinary radio in your kitchen and you grab on to the metal antenna, you will find out that suddenly you hear the program much better because the body is a much better antenna than the metal piece on the radio. So, of course, from that point of view, we have discussed a lot, especially when it comes to FM radio, because they are body resonant. The wavelength in Sweden of FM radio, and I guess it's more or less the same in the United States, it's 3 meters, so the half length is 1.5 meters, which then suits a grown-up perfectly well. And in that way, your body will get a lot of irradiation from radio broadcasting in the FM range.
So I had one other quick thing before everyone now turns off their FM radio because of fear of exposure.
They should change to another wavelength. We have discussed that in Sweden a lot, that maybe the simple solution would be to go back to a middle or long wave, where we talk about wavelengths like in the 10, 20 meter up to several hundred meters range, where the human body would not function as an antenna. You would sort of be below the antenna range for that kind of energies, and you would get away. But the problem is, of course, the microwaves, because the microwave range for wireless internet, mobile telephony, and decked indoor telephones and so on, they will suit both tissue pieces, cellular pieces, and so on. And that would, of course, have to be then changed pretty dramatically.
In fact, I got an email from someone who noted that you were going to be on today, and she said that they are pushing WLAN and also DECT DEC phones in schools in the UK. So
that's
I guess along with trying to live in a place where you get no cell function at all, where you can't get any reception on a cell phone, and where your FM reception is crummy. Mm-hmm. Other than doing that, like we have done, mm-hmm. living in the woods or something. Mm-hmm. What other things? We're going to talk in the next half hour. I hope you'll stay with us about what people can do in communities to protect mm-hmm. themselves. But what are your recommendations to people? Are you telling people? I mean, obviously, we're not going to stop using our computers. We're going to want to watch some TV.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that part of what we're asking people to do is to be activists in their own communities about blanketing themselves with additional radiation, and maybe eschew some of these technologies and not use wireless.
Yeah, that's a very good comment, I would say. And I mean, if you look, for instance, on the United States, right now we are talking more than 60 wireless U.S. cities, for instance. And, of course, people living in these cities, they should, as you say, be very active and demand further research. And no one would be more happy than I, for instance, if it turns out that all these scientific suspicions are just not true. I mean, it turns out that it's without any harm. I would be very, very happy, you know. But then I think very, very quickly you have to initiate and start and also continue previous scientific research, so you really could reach the level of knowledge and saying, it's all right, it's okay, you don't have to worry. It was just a coincidence that scientists found these different effects. At the same time, you know, I would be extremely surprised if you would arrive at such a conclusion, because after all, we are talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of scientific reports in the peer-reviewed scientific literature, unfortunately all of them pointing in the direction and saying bluntly that if you are a cell in a while in Australia, or if you are a mouse in Greece, a rat in Sweden, or a DNA molecule in the United States, you should just not get even close to these sources of radiation, regardless if we talk about mobile telephony, FM radio, whatever, you know. And I would be very surprised if all these studies would be wrong. I've never heard about such a coincidence before, you know.
Gee, it makes me wonder whether it's safer to listen to your radio on the internet than to listen to an FM radio.
The radio as such in your kitchen is just a receiver and not a transmitter, whereas the computer you use most often people are hooked up via their laptop or desktop or the mobile telephones. They are also at the same time transmitting energy.
Yeah, although if you're wired... If you're wired, it's a little safer, isn't it? If you're in a wired technology?
Yes, you are wired, but at the end point, you still have to have a mobile unit. That's the whole idea with a wireless internet, you know.
No. What I'm saying is if people use wired, like we use...
Sorry. Yeah.
We use to connect to our cable our internet. We use a wired router.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear that. It's a bit bad connection now. But that's, of course, true, you know. That would be better, you know.
Yeah.
And, for instance, I talk now in an old-fashioned wide telephone.
Oh,
The things I tell you would be, of course, exactly the same if I was on a wireless mobile telephone.
Yeah, but you sound better.
So the message content doesn't change.
Yeah, exactly. I understand. We're going to need to take a brief break. I hope you'll stay with us, Ole. Don't go away.
I will be here.
Stay. Yeah. Okay. Dr. Johansson, Ole Johansson from Stockholm, the Karolinska Institute. And we're going to just play a little music for a moment, and then we'll come back. And we have Dr. Jeff Fawcett, political economist and health educator, works with me on the show. And then we'll have Doug Lorem, filmmaker and activist in San Francisco, join us for the second half. So this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with more information on electrosmog.
The blues. lady, just when the sun is going down.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show on electrosmog. I'm joined by a variety of people. We've been listening to my conversation with Dr. Ole Johansson, J-O-H-A-N-S-S-O-N, from the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. He is the most recognized researcher on the adverse health effects of radio frequency and cell phone radiation. We also have joining us during the second half hour, Doug Loringer, whose film Bad Exposures discusses how San Francisco is fighting to resist being blanketed by wireless technology. And Dr. Jeff Fawcett, as I mentioned, is with us too. So, one thing that occurred. Oh, I should mention that if you missed parts of today's show, you can always go to the website and listen to it all week at our website, which is yourownhealthandfitness.org. And you can also get a copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, by calling 707-874-2772. You'll also find information on the website about the benefits of joining the nonprofit Your Own Health and Fitness. Dr. Johansson, is there any way for people to read some of your research?
Of course. I mean, anyone who would like to read could contact me at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. And all of these studies are published in such a form that they could be accessed through the Internet. And could just ask them to, for instance, use the email to contact me if they would be interested in this.
You will get flooded, but if you want to give that out, we will. People will, I think, do that.
Okay, yeah. It's olle.johansson@ki.se.
Okay, so I'm going to repeat that for people. It's olle.johansson@ki.se. And I would ask that people please be respectful of Dr. Johansson's time. And, if you want to contact him for just to get hold of some research, I think that's appropriate. But please remember that he can't diagnose you or treat you or through the Internet or something. So please, I'm just concerned about you getting bombarded. But you've been very generous to make yourself available that way. I think Dr. Fawcett, Jeffrey, did you have something?
Yes, I do. Dr. Johansson, I was listening to your conversation and have read your papers, and they're wonderful. Wonderful research.
Thank you.
But what I was wondering is that the effect of electromagnetic fields kind of has two parts. One is the frequency itself.
Yeah.
And the other is the signal strength.
Yeah.
Now, typically, the regulations for cell phones currently in the United States are set by what's called an SAR.
Yeah.
Which is set to the thermal effect of how much actual radiation is reaching a body, the surface
of
the body.
Well, not really
a body.
You have to remember that the SAR, as you say, it's only a thermal effect, and it's only set on a liquid-filled phantom head, a plastic head. No investigations have ever been performed on the head of humans or on any experimental animals.
So
we actually don't know a thing.
Wow. Doug, did you have something also that you wanted to ask Dr. Johansson?
Not at this point. I'm just, listening to
you. You're just absorbing all of this?
Well, he's absorbing all the electromagnetic energy,
Well, the thought on that, the thought behind why I asked the question, the two moving parts, that wasn't so much about the SAR, although that's really valuable information about how those thermal effects are, the standard is actually set. So I've found in my own research that how standards are set are often highly political and economic issues.
Yeah.
But more what I was thinking about is your understanding, your sense of the relationship between, for instance, in ionizing, the issue of ionizing radiation. The National Academy of Sciences has finally acknowledged what many researchers in the area have said for in fact, decades, is that there is no safe dose. So in terms of non-ionizing radiation, is it also true that there is no safe frequency, and is there no safe signal strength?
Oh, that's a very clever comment, I must say, you know, because when we have had discussions about that, for instance, at the Karolinska Institute, if you should today, based on the science that is available, not have a safety recommendation label, but safety strict guideline, or what you say, you know, a true level below which it's really safe, then you have to put it at zero. There is just no safe level known today. And if you look into the research that has been done, for each year people have sort of climbed downwards to effects seen at lower and lower effect levels, lower and lower SAR levels. And for instance, the SAR level in Sweden, the maximal recommendation is 2 watts per kilogram, and scientists are already down to 20 microwatts per kilogram, which is 100,000 times below that. And I'm sure we will see in the next few years people climbing even further down. And the interesting thing, as you say, if you move to from signal strength to frequency, and just think about, for instance, ordinary light, you know that you can go out in the evening and look at the stars, and they are beautiful. You can write a song about the stars and a poem, and the SAR level is actually 0 watt per kilogram. And from the Swedish Radiation Authority point of view, stars doesn't exist. Because they always refer to thermal levels. And of course, there is no thermal level from a star at the other side of the galaxy, you know. Oh. And still you will see it because you have specialized receptors that has been developed through evolution to pick up exactly that kind of electromagnetic radiation. So if there is a frequency dependent effect, maybe you will have to move to frequencies, or if you turn it around, to wavelengths that are far longer than yourself, as we discussed before. Maybe if you have not body resonant wavelengths, like at 100 meters, maybe it will be safe. But again, science doesn't know this. It's just a hypothesis.
One of the very interesting perspectives you have in your papers is, I forget which paper it was that you looked at age-specific incidents of the effects of electro. I think it was cancer incidents.
Yeah. Okay.
A melanoma incidents.
Yeah.
And that what you found was that epidemiologically, certain age groups became stabilized after 1958, beginning 1958,
yes.
And that as you got into older age groups, particularly after age 65, that the incidence continued to increase.
Exactly.
So what we're seeing there is, in a sense, finding out what percentages of the population are sensitive to those electromagnetic fields.
And also that they are, of course, dependent on exposure time.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, sorry that I interrupt you, but, you know, the interesting thing in Sweden is that the very dramatic increase in malignant melanoma starting 1955, when you move to sort of modern times, I have done it myself. I've lectured to students, and I've claimed that the reason for that was that Swedes went abroad on charter holidays that was the explanation, the official explanation. And Örjan Hallberg, my collaborator, and myself, we then suddenly decided to look into the statistics, and it turned out, oddly enough, you know, that the first charter tourist left Sweden in the beginning of the 1960s, actually 7 years after the eruption of this dramatic increase of malignant melanomas. So that could definitely not be the sole explanation.
Yeah, in other words, they
may be intelligent, yeah, but it couldn't anticipate that Swedes would go abroad 7 years ahead of it, you know.
Yeah, you're saying sun exposure wasn't the explanation.
No, not the sole explanation, and definitely not from charter tourism in Sweden.
Well, also, these melanomas are showing up in places where the sun doesn't shine.
Exactly, yeah.
Part of the motivation behind my asking that is whether you have used this same technique to look at the emergence of other cancers and other conditions, particularly asthma and more classical hypersensitivities.
We would like to do that, but I'm sorry that I have to repeat myself so many times. Our problem since many years is that we practically lack any form of monetary resource.
Yeah, so people should send money.
Well,
I'm
that
serious.
Would be great, of course. But, I mean, this kind of research could be also done in the United States, in California, in San Francisco, and so on. It's very easy to do it from that point of view. But still, you know, it does cost money. You need money to get hold of the different registers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know. But the things you ask for, we would very much like to do. We are trying to get funding for it. And as soon as we do, we will go ahead, because as you point out, these are very important issues, you know.
Yeah. So you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I have Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett, my partner here, and I've been talking to Ole Johansson at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden, and he has very graciously given out his email for people who want to get access to his papers. It's OLLEJOHANSSON at KI.SE. Do you want us to put that on our website as well, or do you think just broadcasting it is enough?
Well, I think it's enough in a way.
In the broadcast. All right. So
it's impossible for me via the internet to give any advice.
No advice.
Diseases or treatments that you have.
Exactly. Yeah. No diagnosing. No. If you just want to get hold of his papers, contact him. Now, I want to bring.
Sorry, don't forget that between my first name, OLLE, and my family name, it should be a dot.
Oh, okay. So it's OLLE dot J O H A N S S O N at KI.SE.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Now, I'd like to bring in Doug Loringer for the remainder of the discussion. And Dr. Johansson, please join us and ask any questions you have. But Doug Loringer is a San Francisco based community organizer and documentary filmmaker. He has a film called Bad Reception. In 2002, he co-founded SNAFU, the San Francisco Neighborhood Antenna Free Union, a grassroots citywide coalition of community residents and neighborhood groups that focuses on the impacts of proliferating wireless technologies. Doug, just to bring people up to speed on what's going on in San Francisco, where here in California, there's a fight by activists in the city to reduce this proliferation to, there's this movement that I think will be echoed across the country in other cities. Can you bring us up to speed on what exactly is going on? I know you wrote a letter to Newsom, you had a reply from the EPA. Kind of bring us up to speed on what's going on.
Yeah, well, there are really two prongs to what's going on that our group is specifically focused on. The first is what's been happening since we formed the group about 5 years ago, and that's a response to the licensed antenna facilities that service the major cell phone carriers like Singular and Verizon, T-Mobile, and so forth. And second, we have what's proposed now, which is a citywide Wi-Fi or wireless fidelity network, and that's using an unlicensed technology. So there are two issues there. If it's a licensed technology in the United States, it falls under the rubric of a federal law that was passed in 1996 called the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And among other things, that law preempts local governments like San Francisco or any other local government in the United States from considering the health and environmental effects of the radiation given off by cell phone antennas when they when choosing where to place these. And that's as long as they meet the FCC standards, which we've briefly mentioned before, only protect people from thermal or heating effects like a microwave oven would do if the power levels are high enough. And of course, we're dealing with much lower intensity levels. So that basically is a way the industry attempted to remove the entire health and environmental debate from going into effect here. So essentially, antennas can go up on or next to elementary schools or hospitals anywhere in the United States unless residents take certain types of other types of action. That's what my film deals with, Bad Reception. The full title is Bad Reception, the Wireless Revolution in San Francisco. So that's primarily a good source for people to learn more about how to go about successfully fighting licensed cell phone antennas that are proposed for your neighborhood or your community. What's happening now is that the mayor of San Francisco is inviting an array of industry and other groups to essentially decide how they're going to set up a Wi-Fi network. And Wi-Fi, again, it's basically a way for people to surf the internet wirelessly, usually on their Wi-Fi, on their wireless laptop computers. These involve antennas that are even lower power, typically, although that's not always the case, than cell phone antennas, the licensed kind. So they may only have a range of, say, 100 or 200 or 300 feet, whereas the cell phone antenna may stretch for a mile or more or two. And the problem there is that this is unlicensed technology. I mean, there's an upside and a downside. Since it's not licensed by the FCC, and we would argue not covered under the Telecom Act, the city can decide can consider health and environmental issues with respect to this type of technology. The downside is that anyone can walk into a store that sells this stuff and basically set up a Wi-Fi hotspot in their apartment. You know, your next-door neighbor could have one wirelessly linking their network in their apartment. This could be, the transmitter could be placed right across the wall from where your child sleeps in a crib, for example. You never know this because there's no licensing, there's no public notification about these things. So what the city wants to do is essentially under the guise of providing internet services to people, underserved populations, people who generally can't afford internet, that this is the magical solution to that, to slap up some Wi-Fi antennas all over the city and magically, where people who didn't have the money to surf the internet are now going to be able to do that. And so our group is at this point attempting mainly to get the people aware that Wi-Fi even presents a health issue. That's something that's many people don't even know, that their cellular phones operate using are themselves antennas that connect to these cell phone antennas that they don't want in their backyard or on their local school. And perhaps even fewer people realize that Wi-Fi uses the same types of microwave radiation that Dr. Johansson was talking about before. So it's, A, we're trying to educate the public that Wi-Fi does present these uncertain yet probably dangerous health situation. And B, we're going to do our best to have the city not implement this. We'll have to do that through, testifying, organizing locally, and so forth. So that's what's happening here. And this is, as Dr. Johansson seems to know even better than I do, how many cities around the country right now are moving towards wireless, citywide.
Well, I could even give you the names if you want to, but we shouldn't take time with that. Yeah. Could I just comment and say that? You are perfectly right in everything you say, and as you say, these Wi-Fi antennas, they do have a short range and a low power. But interestingly enough, there has been a recent Dutch study, this called TNO study, which mimics very much the kind of frequencies we are talking about. And they had also low power irradiation of normal healthy volunteers. And when they were seated in this irradiation for a short time period, they got subjective symptoms such as dizziness, nausea, and headache. And the question, for instance, to discussion groups in Sweden has been, do you think that's an appropriate price to pay for wireless internet, that you have headaches, nausea, dizziness? And the answer was just no. No one wanted to have that. And then I would also like to put a question to all of you, because we very often read about your famous legal system in the United States. And my question is, if I, as a private person in San Francisco, would mount such a local hotspot system in my flat. It turns out that the baby you were mentioning in the crib next doors will get some serious damage like childhood leukemia or some other cancer forms. Could you put me to trial in a court? Mm-hmm.
Well,
would I have to pay you?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. First of all, I'm not an attorney, and so you have to take what I say with a grain of salt. But our main advice here is, as grassroots activists, people, in other words, who don't have any money, don't get any money to do what we do,
okay,
largely volunteers, is the best place to put pressure locally in any local community in the United States is on your elected officials, because they, you know, no matter how much money they take from the telecom industry as campaign contributions, they ultimately have to face election. And so typically when you're dealing with licensed antennas, you may have to go before a local planning board or zoning administrator, but you often have an appeal process where you can then appeal a specific licensed antenna to elected city body, city council, board of supervisors. But in terms of the Wi-Fi example, first of all, you can sue anyone over anything in the United States.
Okay, yeah, we'll read about that.
Yeah, the question is whether you'll ultimately win and whether the enormous amounts of money it takes are going to be worth it.
From my point of view, I would say, is it worth the risk to lose the kind of money we're talking about? Because we understand that sometimes people are sentenced to very extremely high fines because they have caused damage or disease, you know.
Right. Well, I think that what I'm saying is many people don't have the financial wherewithal to hire attorneys to do this kind of thing. So, but I think that those who do, those who organize together and chip in money and want to pursue that, I mean, there are certain legal avenues they can pursue. We have something, a concept of a public nuisance in the United States. That you could claim that's what's happening. Again, I'm not an attorney, and I don't really want to recommend how people proceed legally. But so they're definitely. Yeah, I would say the general answer is sure. You could be creative if you have the resources to use the legal system to try to deal with this. Then certainly there are options for people. You know, many, if not most, people just don't have those financial resources to mount legal attacks. But and that's what our group tries, mainly helps those folks who don't have the money to do this, and try to provide them with creative ways that you can keep the stuff out. And one example would be, I mean, one thing you could do, for example, there are inexpensive meters available where you could, for say, $15, buy a Wi-Fi detecting device. And if you're in an apartment building or a home and you detect a signal, you might, you know, if it turns on, you could knock on the door of your neighbor and say, hey, by any chance you have, you know, Wi-Fi, and find someone. And you could, maybe show them one of Dr. Johansson's studies engage them in a conversation and ask them, if you must have this thing, can you turn it, you know, make it sure it's as low as possible, you know, it's not giving, you know, I mean, there are different ways people can do this and try to be creative. And the problem is we really are, you know, it can be an extremely overwhelming situation. We have these major money and corporations behind this,
yes,
and pushing it.
We're running dangerously out of time. And, Doug, I want people to be able to get and see your film because I found it just astonishing. So please tell us how people can get hold of your film.
Sure. It's available. A group called Free Speech TV sells it over the web. And even though it's under their video section, I believe they can also make DVDs for people now if you ask them. There's a link to that on our group's website, which is www.antennafreeunion.org. That's antennafreeunion.org. SNAPU is our group, San Francisco Neighborhood Antenna Free Union. So if you follow the link on that page, people should be able to get a copy of the movie and ask for a DVD version if that's what they want.
Yeah, and we'll put that contact information directly on our website, which is yourownhealthandfitness.org. Again, the film is called Bad Reception, and I very much urge everybody who's listening to get a copy of it because it really does explain all of this very well. It is absolutely mind-blowing to see how many antennas there are in San Francisco. It makes you kind of not want to go to the city. We're going to have to wrap it up. I want to thank my guests, Dr. Ole Johansson from the Karolinska Institute. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Well, thank you so much yourself.
Such a pleasure. Dr. Jeff Fawcett here, and Doug Loringer, thank you all so much. And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information and or you want a CD copy of this or any other in the series Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772. You can also go to the website yourownhealthandfitness.org to listen to the show online all week. For a list of other available shows, information about guests, and news about the nonprofit and the benefits of membership, again, go to the website yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is a joint production of Your Own Health and Fitness and KPFA-FM. The engineer today for Your Own Health and Fitness is Dev Ross. Remember, being informed not only protects your health,